Good evening. In the news tonight, as violence continues in Syria, rescue groups are reporting a gas attack which suffocated people in the city of Aleppo. Police reform advocates and elected officials rally at City Hall for NYPD transparency in the case of NYPD cop Daniel Pantaleo. He put Staten Island's Eric Garner in a deadly chokehold in 2014. Residents of Hoosick Falls in upstate New York are angry over response to the tainted water crisis in their town. Mumia Abu-Jamal and other Pennsylvania prisoners are being denied a drug to treat hepatitis. With these and other stories in New York, I'm Linda Perry, and this is some of the news for Tuesday, September 6, 2016. Beginning with international news, Yemeni Human Rights Minister al-Asbahi is accusing the country's Shiite rebels of forcing children to fight in Yemen's civil war. He says the rebels have recruited as many as 4,800 boys over the last 6 months. Al-Asbahi also says the rebels, known as Houthis, have killed about 1,000 civilians in the two-year conflict. More than 300 children have died, either because of gunfire or rockets. International rights groups accuse the Saudi-led coalition, which is backing the government, of causing most of the casualties in Yemen's conflict through airstrikes. Al-Asbahi said an estimated 3,000 people were detained by rebels in areas under their control and some 70 cases of torture inside Houthi-controlled prisons. In Syria, the Syrian Civil Defense, a rescue workers organization which operates in rebel-held areas, said government helicopters dropped barrel bombs containing chlorine on the neighborhood in eastern Aleppo. The suspected chlorine gas attack caused dozens of cases of suffocation today. A video released by the Syrian Civil Defense showed residents affected being treated for respiratory issues. Amidst rubble, rescue workers were hosing off children, being brought onto hospital beds with trouble breathing. One doctor treating a young girl was visibly upset. The Syrian government denied previous accusations it used chemical weapons during the five-year-old civil war. The British-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, which tracks Syrian violence using sources on the ground, said medical sources reported 70 cases of suffocation. Meanwhile, President Obama says he and Russian President Vladimir Putin are continuing to seek a deal on Syria. Obama described talks with Putin as tough but productive after their meeting at the G20 summit in China.
We have had some productive conversations about what a real cessation of the hostilities would look like, that would allow us both, the United States and Russia, to focus our attention on common enemies like ISIL and Nusra. Given the gaps of trust that exist, that's a tough negotiation. We haven't yet closed the gaps in a way where we think it would actually work. But my instructions to Secretary Kerry and Mr. Putin's instructions to Mr. Lavrov was to keep working at it over the next several days.
Putin said the two men had understood each other and an agreement on ways to significantly reduce the violence in Syria could be reached in days. Also at the G20 summit in China, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon urged leaders of major world economies to live up to their commitments on climate finance. This includes a promise to provide $100 billion for climate-related projects. Jocelyn Sambira reports.
The key targets of the agreement are to keep global temperature rises below 2 degrees Celsius and to provide $100 billion a year in climate finance for developing countries by 2020. Delivering on climate finance is an important step to supporting developing countries' efforts to implement the climate accord, Mr. Ban noted. On Saturday, both China and the United States announced their ratification of the international agreement, taking it a step closer to becoming a reality. The two countries are responsible together for 40% of the world's emissions. Jocelyn Sambira, United Nations.
In other international news, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas said on Tuesday that a proposed meeting in Moscow with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will not be held for now. President Putin has proposed a meeting on September 9th in Moscow. "I agreed to this," Abbas said, "and I was going to go to Moscow directly from here." Abbas told this to a joint news conference with Polish President Duda in Warsaw. Abbas said, "Unfortunately, Netanyahu's representative proposed to postpone the meeting for later, so there will be no meeting." The last Israeli-Palestinian peace talks collapsed in 2014. On the campaign trail, Senator Bernie Sanders campaigned for Hillary Clinton in New Hampshire on Monday. He urged voters to remember that the election isn't about people running for office, but for voters and what is good for the needs of the American people. He said Clinton would be best for criminal justice reform.
"Hillary Clinton understands that our criminal justice system is broken and that there is something wrong when we are spending $80 billion a year to imprison 2.2 million fellow Americans. She will fight for real criminal justice reform, not something that has ever occurred to Donald Trump."
And Sanders said he and Clinton will fight for more funding for sustainable and renewable energy, that they will fight together for a higher minimum wage. A Supreme Court nominee who supports overturning Citizens United and increased infrastructure spending in order to create more jobs. On his private plane yesterday, Donald Trump says he will participate in all of the presidential debates against Hillary Clinton, but with minimal prep. Hillary Clinton said she will not accept an invitation from the Mexican president for a visit after Donald Trump created what she called a diplomatic incident in his foray over there. Clinton and Trump are both courting veterans this week ahead of a national security forum, which is scheduled for Wednesday evening. Trump said Clinton would treat immigrants better than vets. Clinton said veterans know they can count on her to be the kind of commander-in-chief who will protect our country. In other campaign news, amidst pay-for-play allegations, the Washington Post reported that Bill Clinton was paid $65.4 million during Hillary Clinton's 4 years as Secretary of State. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. New York City police say they have a man in custody who may have been involved in one of the two fatal shootings during Juve, a carnival celebrating Caribbean culture held before dawn each Labor Day in Brooklyn. Police are holding a 20-year-old male who lives on Flatbush Avenue.
He has, Dina, most of his arrests are sealed. He has five prior to the DWI, and they're all sealed, so we won't get too much further into that. He makes statements to two people and implicates himself. And he makes statements to my detectives as well that he may have shot somebody. He did not know the gun was loaded. And he makes a concerted effort to get rid of the gun.
17-year-old Tyreek Borrell was shot in the chest at around 3:50 a.m. in Brooklyn. Police said a 72-year-old woman was shot in the arm at the same location. Another was shot in the leg. Soon after, a 22-year-old woman, Tyra Poye, was shot in the head just a block away. Borrell and Poye died. The violence followed stepped-up security and additional security cameras and light towers to counter violence at last year's parade. Mayor Bill de Blasio.
There's more to be done, and we are going to do a very clear after-action review to find out what we can do better. But I remind you, not many years ago in this town, the parade was very problematic, the parade itself on Labor Day. And there were many violent activities that were a part of it. NYPD systematically figured out over years how to change that. And as you heard, this year the parade went well. That was true in years past. Also, that same process had to be gone through with the St. Patrick's Parade, with the Puerto Rican Parade. We had long problematic histories for years, and the NYPD had to figure out a strategy that would break through and then keep it that way, and succeeded in all three of those cases. We have to do the same now with Juve. So we're going to look at all options. Juve will continue. It's an event that's very important to the community, and about 250,000 people came. But we're going to look at every conceivable way to make it safer.
Even with the violence in the early morning before the West Indian Day Parade, revelers said the parade was delightful.
What do we want?
Transparency.
When do we want it?
Now!
There is uproar in New York City over disclosure of disciplinary misconduct records regarding Daniel Pantaleo. He is the NYPD officer at the center of the chokehold death of Eric Garner. Police reform advocates and elected officials gathered on the steps of City Hall today to announce that they filed an amicus brief. This is in the case of Luongo versus CCRB, the Civilian Complaint Review Board. It demands that the CCRB, which is supposed to be an independent body tasked with investigating police misconduct, reveal substantiated records of misconduct by Pantaleo.
Change does not happen unless we have transparency. Change does not happen unless we have real accountability.
Legal aid attorney Tina Luongo is plaintiff in the court case. She demands that the community have access to Pantaleo's substantiated CCRB complaints and his record.
Change does not happen without an honest conversation in our communities, in our courthouses, at City Hall, about how we have real reform in the criminal justice system, real reform in our communities, and real relationships between NYPD and the people they serve.
Manhattan Borough President Gail Brewer says she is a very strong supporter of transparency in government.
It is vital that we as New Yorkers are able to learn the facts in the rare instance when an officer may not be adhering to the standards that we require, where instead of serving and protecting, he or she may pose a danger. We rely on the CCRB as necessary in this effort. We have to rely on their independence and the integrity of their findings. While some information may be unpleasant or painful, we may wish to avoid reliving some painful times in our city's history. It is, in fact, necessary that we have the facts.
Protecting substantiated claims against an officer is baffling to Bronx Councilmember Andy King.
I'm kind of confused. How does a board that was created to review information, collect information, then recommend, say we're not going to give you the information that you've been collecting and reviewing? Doesn't make sense to me. This is what you've been created to do. So there is no justification of the action that they have put us all in this position that we must stand here and tell them to do their job. It reminds me, are we back in 1930 when we know race relationship between law enforcement and the black and communities of color are at a strain? Are they hiding something? What's going on? We know the creation of CCRB, there was a point that you had family members in there that were trying to make decisions against officers. So are we back at that stage? What is going wrong that we are standing here today asking them to do something they should be doing? We strongly urge them to comply. We strongly urge them to help us build relationships, better relationship between NYPD and the communities of color and all of New York. And the only way we do that is making sure we celebrate those officers that are doing right, and those who are doing wrong must be held accountable.
And Councilmember King says the lack of transparency is making the coming together of police and community members that much more difficult.
Well, I know in the communities that I represent, the community is full of people of color. There's frustration, there's anger, and there's a sense of sick and tired of being sick and tired. So I don't perpetuate or I don't support violence, but there has to be a better way. We've asked people time and time again, whether it was Romali Graham or Eric Garner or Gurley, hey, trust the system. We're going to relax. We got this. Believe in the work that we're doing downtown to make our city safe. But the system has to make our city safe. And that means holding those who mess it up accountable. If either one of us mess up our job, we don't get another chance at coming back in the office. So if a police officer screws it up, not everybody can do the job. We appreciate your tenacity to say, I want to do the job. But if you can't do it because you just don't have it in you, if you can't do it just because of your racial bigotry that's inside of you, because we got to call it for what it is, because we don't have black officers killing black people all the time. We always have this challenge when it comes to white and black officers in the communities of color. So right now we're at a space in my district, and I just had a conversation 2 days ago with a community, with the churches and the police department, trying to figure out how do we build that bridge, how do we build that trust. At the end of the day, there's no way, other way to build trust than to hold people accountable when they mess it up. And for those who get it right, they keep staying in the job.
Brooklyn Councilmember Brad Lander.
Maybe I'll just add, the council has been pushing members who are here and many others for a better system of accountability around that small number of officers who have a large number of substantiated complaints. We have been pushing for a system that would make that transparent. And what we have essentially from the NYPD is, they're saying, trust us. We have a system in place that does that. You just can't see it. And unfortunately, we're not at a moment when that trust is there. And we need to be able, in this one case right now, but I think you're right in the broader situation as well, to have some transparency about
I just want to add
Manhattan Borough President Gail Brewer.
One way to do it is not as necessarily supportive of today, but is data. In other words, the police department releases certain data, but this kind of data is not released. In other words, somebody who racks up a certain number of challenges is not something that is collected and transparent. It's another way. As an open author of the open data law, I want this data and data science to be part of NYPD.
NYCLU Executive Director Donna Lieberman says it's been 2 years since the death of Eric Garner, and New Yorkers still don't have any access to basic information on how and whether the officers involved in his death will be disciplined.
The grand jury process was shrouded in secrecy and failed to indict a single officer for what the medical examiner called murder, a murder witnessed by millions. The NYCLU and many others, including Legal Aid, tried and failed to lift the shroud of secrecy surrounding the grand jury proceeding. And so the murder of Eric Garner remains emblematic of what's wrong with law enforcement practices that disproportionately impact and hurt people of color, the other failure of our criminal justice system to hold officers accountable for wrongdoing, even when that wrongdoing amounts to murder, and a system is shrouded in secrecy. The need for transparency about policing could not be greater, could not be more obvious than in this case. And that's why the New York Civil Liberties Union strongly supports the Legal Aid Society's request for a summary of substantiated CCRB complaints against the officer who killed Eric Garner. Those records are essential for understanding how something like this could have happened. Were there warning signs? Could more have been done to prevent the behavior that killed Eric Garner?
Lieberman says there's no reason for the city to deny the request to see the CCRB records. And as Jose Perez, who is legal director with Latino Justice, says, for the past 40 years, substantiated records were not withheld.
The NYPD, up until earlier this year, had a policy of providing the summaries of substantiated complaints. What are they hiding now? Why are they attempting to use the FOIL, New York 50A, to, again, extend it beyond direct city agencies to independent city agencies, which hasn't been done in the past? The CCRB is an independent city agency. Why is the city advancing this argument? What are they trying to hide? It makes no sense for a mayor who claims to be progressive to advancing, seeking to appeal, and again, trying to further delay or withhold these records. What light bulb went off in somebody's bright mind that, gee, we shouldn't provide this information anymore? Again, if we're talking about transparency, engaging in an open dialogue, the system is broken, how can we fix it? You know, that's information needs to be shared.
And this is the WBAI Evening News. Residents of the upstate community want those who contaminated their drinking water to be subpoenaed to testify at legislative water safety hearings on Wednesday. Andrea Sears reports.
Officials from Saint-Gobain and Honeywell, the companies allegedly responsible for a chemical known as PFOA in the water, were conspicuously absent from a hearing held in Hoosick Falls last week. Town resident Michelle Baker says she's very disappointed that State Senator Kathy Marchione, who convened the hearing, didn't insist that company executives attend or make statements.
They apparently had someone sitting in the audience, we understand, but I think it's really important for Saint-Gobain and Honeywell to face us, hear our stories and the struggles that we're going through with this water crisis.
Both companies had factories in the town that used PFOA, which has been linked to several health problems, including cancer. Residents want company leaders to be ordered to attend a September 7th hearing in Albany on water quality and contamination. Public officials at last week's hearings blamed the EPA for the state's slow response to the contamination, saying the agency put out confusing and contradictory information. but Baker disagrees, saying the EPA's advisories were clearly stated.
We knew what the levels were. Why didn't Health Commissioner Zucker understand this? What was so complicated to know what the dangers of residents, children, seniors drinking PFOA is?
In 2009, the EPA warned that PFOA in water should not exceed 400 parts per trillion, and this year lowered that to 70. Some tests in Hoosick Falls have shown levels above 600 parts per trillion. And Baker points to reports showing, despite repeated warnings about PFOA in Hoosick Falls water, state officials delayed taking decisive action.
Our water was poisoned for decades by Saint-Gobain and Honeywell. And then we knew about this for 18 months, and New York State failed to act and protect us folks.
Saint-Gobain and Honeywell have agreed to pay to install and maintain a filtration system for the Hoosick Falls municipal water supply. For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. Imprisoned journalist and former Black Panther Mumia Abu-Jamal continues to be denied life-saving hepatitis C medication. In a mixed message ruling late last week, federal judge Robert Mariani denied a preliminary injunction motion. It demanded that Hep C treatment for Jamal be given. At the same time, it condemned the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections Hep C protocol as deliberately indifferent and unconstitutional. WBAI's Sally O'Brien has more.
Denouncing a prison policy that denies Mumia Abu-Jamal and other Pennsylvania prisoners a costly hepatitis C drug, quote, until they have advanced liver damage, Judge Mariani turned down the motion, saying, quote, the persons against whom injunctive relief may be granted are not parties to this lawsuit. Mariani stated that because the specific members of the Department of Corrections Hepatitis C Care Committee were not named in the lawsuit, quote, this motion will fail. The memorandum by Mariani says, quote, if the proper defendants had been named, Mumia may well have prevailed in his request for immediate life-saving treatment. Bob Boyle is one of the attorneys for Mumia Abu-Jamal.
We didn't even know this committee existed until we were at the end of our hearing, long after the suit was filed. But it's extremely disappointing. Maybe the judge was looking for an out, because we are suing the head of health care of the Department of Corrections, the warden, all the doctors. But what we are gratified about is that the judge did agree with us on the essence of our substantive arguments, which is that people with chronic hepatitis C, like Mumia, should be given these drugs because the drugs have a 95% cure rate, and to not give them the drugs prolongs suffering and can even lead to death. So the decision was not good for us, but we think we can deal with that. But in other ways, it was extremely helpful, and not only to Mumia, but to all the prisoners in Pennsylvania who are suffering from chronic hepatitis C, and there are over 6,000 of them.
Baruch College history professor Johanna Fernandez is an organizer with the campaign to bring Mumia home. She's also the producer of a film about his case, Justice on Trial. She calls the ruling perplexing.
He ruled on a technicality, and it's the most contradictory of rulings, because he's saying that Mumia's attorneys did not name a committee within the Department of Corrections that has the authority to give Mumia the medication. But ultimately, that committee was organized by the Department of Corrections. So the top dog, the entity that has the power to make good on the promise of keeping the health of prisoners, in the final analysis, is the Department of Corrections.
During the three-day hearing before Judge Mariani, experts testified that the latest antiviral drugs have a cure rate as high as 90 to 96%. Left untreated, however, this condition is life-threatening. Attorney Bob Boyle says his client is suffering.
He has chronic hepatitis C, which means he can have flares of certain conditions, such as his skin condition, anemia, and sometimes the symptoms are mild at a certain point and he's feeling better, and other times it flares and he's suffering. That's the nature of chronic disease. As for right now, he's not getting the drug, even though the judge said failure to give the drug constitutes an Eighth Amendment violation.
And, says Johanna Fernandez, long-term effects are irreversible.
Doctors say that when it grips a patient with chronic and active hepatitis C, as Mumia has, it's deadly. Once it takes a hold, it's very difficult to go back because the damage is so severe. Right now, the doctors on both sides, both Mumia's doctors and the Department of Corrections doctors, determined that he likely has a 60% chance that his liver is severely damaged. So we're talking about a life and death situation.
The ruling found that the failure to give this hepatitis C medication is cruel and unusual punishment. And, says Bob Boyle, the prison does not have to wait for an injunction to comply with the Constitution.
So I would urge your listeners to keep the pressure on the Pennsylvania DOC, telling them to comply with the judge's finding that the failure to give this medication is cruel and inhuman treatment, and that they should give the medication now, not only to Mumia, but to all chronic hepatitis C sufferers within the DOC.
Bob Boyle is an attorney for former Black Panther and imprisoned journalist Mumia Abu-Jamal. And for WBAI News, I'm Sally O'Brien.
And that's the WBAI Evening News for Tuesday, September 6, 2016. The news was produced with Jocelyn Sambira, Sally O'Brien, Andrea Sears, and Reggie Johnson. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.